Okay, I'll just remind people you are tuned into Local Motion here on 91.3 WVKR Independent Radio, Poughkeepsie, New York. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to the YouTube page under Local Motion on 91.3 WVKR, and also subscribe to the Facebook page by the same name. Now, let's get David on the line. David, are you with me?
I am, Rita. Hello.
Hello. Let me do a brief introduction, if I may, before we start getting into our little conversation. I'll start off by saying, record producer, film composer, musician, arranger, recording engineer, David Barron has worked with countless artists, including Pink, The Lumineers, Shania Twain, Jade Bird, Shawn Mendes, Lenny Kravitz, Meghan Trainor, Lana Del Rey, just to name a few. David owns his private recording studio, Sun Mountain, just outside of Woodstock, New York. He's a collector of rare analog synthesizers, and his studio includes a vast instrument collection. And it is always a true pleasure, David, welcoming you back to Local Motion.
Thank you, Rita. It's great always to be on your show, and I really appreciate what you do for all of us in the music scene in the Hudson Valley.
Oh, well, you know, it's a play. Look at where we live. I mean, come on, right? It's just amazing. I want to start off by saying I was watching the Oscars because I love film as much as I love movies. And when I saw Lenny Kravitz do the In Memoriam and he was on the piano, I immediately thought of you, David. And it turns out, of course, your fingers were on that.
Yeah, that was a surprise to some extent. You know, Lenny told me a little bit, but that arrangement that they used for the Oscars was, you know, included the string arrangement that I had recorded many years ago, actually, when we had the Edison Studio in New York City. But it was really, I thought he did a great job, and I thought it was really beautiful to hear. I mean, I was actually a little bit like, whoa, my strings are on the Oscars. It felt kind of like a pretty awesome moment, to be honest.
I think you should have been on that piano with him there or something. I remember you did that with him a couple of years ago at the CNN Heroes Award.
Yes, I played the piano. There's a track on one of his records where I played the piano and he sang it. We had cut it live for the record, and he and I did the same thing at the Heroes Award for CNN but we added a gospel choir because you always got to add something for TV.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I immediately thought of you when he was sitting there. I'm like, this has David Barron's name all over it. So
thank you so much.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun, and seeing Craig up there on stage with the bass, because there's no guitar on the track. Craig's normally the guitarist. I thought that was kind of awesome too.
Right. Yeah. No, it was a cool little surprise, as you say. So David, I always like to step back in time. Yes, you're on the show every year because I just love having you on, and you work on so many amazing projects, which we'll go into some depth about. But I want to, if listeners aren't familiar with you, just step back a little bit, that you actually did grow up in Woodstock, and your father, Aaron Barron, talk about him, because I think that's, you know, you're the next generation of him.
Well, I think I'm making the next generation an Oscar Barron right now.
I love that. Taking,
he's taken the mantle of music, and he's turning into an awesome musician. Yeah, my dad was an electrical engineer who then later became a studio maintenance guy at a few studios in New York City, including Fine Recording and later A&R. And Phil Ramone, who owned A&R, he was the R trained my dad as an engineer, and he and another partner of his, Larry Dahlstrom, started a business which was to put recording equipment onto a truck. They had heard about Wally Hyder's on the West Coast, and they wanted to do the same thing. And so in the late 60s, my dad put together a business called Location Recorders with some 16-track machines and a custom console, and amongst the records that they did early on was Stage Fright for the band.
Man.
Albert Grossman ended up buying into my dad's business, and my dad worked with him for 6 years. They had a 6-year contract, and you know, they did things like Song Remains the Same. For my dad's an engineer, but they used the truck for the Led Zeppelin album. My dad engineered a lot of super classic rock records. And also, when I got old enough and sentient, I missed a lot of the best stuff. My cousin Jeff got to see a lot of the best stuff. But when I got a little bit older, my dad took me everywhere. He took me in the truck. He took me into the Bearsville studios, into the barn, and to Levon's parties, which were a little insane.
Stop for a second. So when you say old enough, what is old enough?
I think my dad started taking me around as soon as I could walk and talk by my I mean, my family was complicated. My sister was born extremely hard of hearing. She from German measles, my mom. Mm. And so we had she was, you know, challenged with language, and she was a lot of it was hard on my mom and my sister. So basically, as soon as I got old enough, I kind of got assigned to my dad, and I loved music and I loved studios. I think I literally was probably 3 years old or 4 years old when he first started taking me to the labels and to the studios. And
wow.
I grew up, I kind of, and you know, back then it was pretty loose. You could like bring your kid and you could just hang out. And I, and I did. And I saw a lot of, I mean, I met so many amazing musicians. Some of them, you know, I was talking to Jerry Murata about when the guy from Orleans showed me how Hammonds and clavinets worked. And I was like, whoa, like these cool people would show me all kinds of stuff in Woodstock. Cause you know, people used to be super, I mean, they are still super nice, but it was a pretty open environment back then.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. How cool to be starting that young, and then Bearsville and that whole complex. I mean, all the things you must have seen because of your dad. It just,
I saw a lot of things. I don't know if I understood all of them.
Right. Right.
They had a lot of fun. The people who were part of the scene had a lot of fun. And the other thing that was nice about it was there was a culture. There's just kind of an openness of culture back then. I mean, it was a little nutty, obviously, but it was also, you know, one thing that I was saying recently is we still have like an amazing area and there's all these amazing people, but we're quite cloistered a lot because of the technology now. We work in a lot of private studios, and back in the old days, you always had to go to a big public studio. So there's a lot more sort of mixing of different groups, which would be nice to have come back at least a little bit. And I know some of the venues are doing it. You know, like even the Pines tonight has like Danny Bloom's group playing, and I've been going every week because they have a revolving character. So you get to see all these different musicians, and you just basically get to hang out with musicians.
That wasn't so far from me, I would be there tonight. I'm so happy that you're going. I think last week you took your son Oscar too, right?
I did take Oscar, and he liked it. You know, he thought it was fun. I mean, you know, it's more for me. The whole thing is, and including bringing Oscar, for me, it's nice when there's places for musicians to hang out and sort of, you know, talk about stuff, and not just the internet. I mean, like actually like in person.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Now it's a beautiful thing in person to do that. So you went to Woodstock Elementary School.
I did. But you know, I didn't graduate. I went to sixth grade. My parents decided to move to New Jersey, to South Orange. And I ended up doing the rest of my growing up in South Orange, but I always loved Woodstock and the area. So, you know, I returned, you know, after I was married, Ginny and I, we bought a house for a while, went back and forth. And then eventually we just kind of moved up here full time. And finally my studio moved from Manhattan to here. And it's all, I mean, it's been, I think it was one of the best decisions we ever made.
Yeah, I bet it was. Now, what was your first instrument? You were obviously an amazing classical pianist trained. Classically trained pianist, I should say. What was your first instrument?
My first instrument was actually classical violin, and then I studied piano, and also very classical. And it's funny, I was around a lot of rock music, but I grew up very, very traditionally musically, and then I studied all of that stuff, and then I went to Oberlin Conservatory, got in as a pianist, and while I was there, I really branched out into like electronic music and technology and composition and theory and all the other fun stuff. I was like, whoa, all kinds of cool stuff.
Right. Now, you had lessons on both violin and piano?
Yeah, that's correct. And
yeah.
I'm not a very good violinist. but I understand where everything is and I understand how it works.
Right. And how it's supposed to sound and all of those things. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So after college, what happens after Oberlin?
After Oberlin, I ended up partnering up with my dad for a while. and we started a business called Barron and Barron. And I wasn't right after college. I first worked with some other people, but eventually my dad wanted to get off the road and do post-production. And so he had like an audio post-production, and I started doing original music, commercial music. And it took us a few years to sort of really find our ground. But I got a lot of work doing sort of branding and branding packages and ID packages for networks and jingles. And I basically did a lot of TV promotion and show opens and all kinds of like, basically the first half of my career is almost all scoring. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get into doing records until quite a bit later on.
Hmm. Hmm. Interesting. And then after Barron and Barron, you and Lenny started Edison Music, right?
That's right. I had Edison Music was my company alone, which was music production company, but Lenny and I and another guy named Henry Hirsch, who was Lenny's engineer, we all rented a space in New York called Edison, in the Hotel Edison, which was a huge studio, a 5,500-foot complex that went out of business. It used to be National Recording Studios. And we took over the studio, and it was amazing. It was this huge room in the middle of New York. And eventually, they wouldn't re-sign our lease. They just were like, we'll let you stay here until we get somebody else in here, but we don't want any more studios, and we want to build a restaurant. And we ended up eventually leaving. Lenny went and built his main facility, which is in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I went upstate, and it was actually like probably the best thing that ever happened, because that all happened right before 2008.
Right.
So the financial crash might have killed us, or at least killed me anyway, but like it was like, oh, okay. And that was really precipitated the move to upstate New York.
Right. And then you have your, and so the house, the studio that you have now is what you purchased in 2008. You didn't go somewhere else and then move there. That was 15 years ago.
No. We bought the house actually even previous to that, but I built out a studio in around that same time, and then it's been wildly renovated and expanded since. I mean, it's not recognizable from what it was originally. And honestly, like right pre-COVID, it became like a bona fide, like it's a studio with a dead live room, a big dead live room full of like amplifiers and Hammond organs and clavinets, and then a very live room that has 16-foot ceilings with a Steinway D and a drum kit and Celeste and a vocal booth that's also separate and a control room that's separate. So you have like four different rooms you can record in with all different types of like atmosphere and ambiences. So it's pretty expansive for a home studio.
And you can record from beginning to end. A full album can be done there without a problem. You don't have to go anywhere else.
No. I mean, we do pretty much soup to nuts on many, many records get finished here. I mean, even that track, the Pink track that we had just done, everything except for Pink's vocals were recorded here. She did her vocals remotely because she didn't want to leave her kids, which totally makes sense. But for the most part, yeah, and we do a lot of the mixing. I mean, you can start here. You can make a full record pretty much of almost any type and walk out with the finished product and put it on the air or whatever we do now. I don't know what we do.
Right. Streaming and gosh knows what else. It's amazing. Uh-huh. David, I also, before we start talking about all these people that you're working with and going to be working with, I really want to focus on your releases, your solo. Today is Piano Day, as you posted and let us all know. And you have some amazing releases also, Ashokan Piano being one of them. Talk about the last two albums that you yourself put out.
Well, that's a good question. I never remember exactly what I just put out. I love making music so much that when I'm not making music for other people, I'm usually making it for myself. A few of the projects that I've been really excited about have been, you know, I put out sort of like an electro techno record with Renee. Renee's my assistant who works with me, Renee Hikari. And one day we had a cancellation and we looked around and we saw all these crazy synthesizers and we said, oh, I've always wanted to do like an 80s synth record. So so we made this song, and then we made a bunch of songs, and we've been releasing them under the name Solari, and that's been going really well. We have a music video coming out and a really good single coming out very soon. We've been sort of building it up slowly. That's been really fun. I have tons of solo piano music that's unreleased now, which I'm really excited to release. And other things that I've been working on, I made a very hybrid, like a sort of strange record at the end of last year, which is kind of more experimental, ambient, electronic, uses Don Byron. I don't know if you know him, but amazing musician.
Yes.
He's also local and blissful.
Yes.
Jazz musician. Mm-hmm. And Tony Levin and just, you know, that kind of like thing. And Fiona Glenn, who I've been recording songs with for a long time. She also performed on that record. There's a song called Stardust, and my friend Kevin Kadish played guitar, and it's more experimental. And there's the first song that Oscar and I ever co-wrote is on, well, first piece, I should say, an ambient piece called Father and Son. And it's literally Oscar and I made a piece of like sort of Brian Eno-esque ambient music.
It is so beautiful. I played it here on air. And it's just so beautiful, that track, Father and Son. And yeah, no, love that. Love that one. Love it.
Yeah, I love it too. And it felt very significant to me to release and to make. And actually, I only played the piano on it. He played all the other synths and violins, and he wrote all the stuff that he played. So it really, truly was a collaboration.
Man, you must be so proud, huh? Where he's going to be in 10 years, I don't even know.
I'm really proud of him, but I'm really happy that he loves it.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of what this is for me is, you know, like, how does someone become good at something? In my world, a lot of times it starts with someone just being really excited about something and feeling really like, well, I'm inspired to do this. I'm going to work really hard at it. I'm going to get really great at it. I mean, that's Oscar in a nutshell. I mean, that's Renee, the assistant. She started out as a runner on the Shania Twain sessions. She didn't know anything about the studio and came to me and like, hey, I want to learn about the studio. And it's that interest and that spark that, that brings the next generation. I mean, look, that's the best thing that I sometimes feel like I could be doing is helping. Like, I'm lucky that I've been able to make a living and got to work on lots of cool stuff, and hopefully we'll work on much more. But it's also pretty awesome to watch your son and your, you know, even other young people, just his, like, he goes to Bard Conservatory Prep, and watching the kids is pretty inspiring.
It is. It really is to see that young generation. I mean, you know, all these recitals I've been part of and stuff. These kids are just amazing. And their passion for music, it's just contagious. And it's just, it's heartwarming to watch it all. That's for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. So, David, some of the work that you're doing is just unbelievable here. What you've got coming up and what you've just come out. Now, what I was surprised to see, and, you know, I don't keep up with that world, but Pink, Long Way to Go with the Lumineers. I mean, never would have put those two together. They sound amazing.
Yeah, it was a crazy, you know, so long story short, Jeremiah Freites and I had worked on a score for a documentary film, which is coming out fairly soon, called Here's Better. And it's about,
Here's Better.
It's called, and it's about, PTSD post-military, and it's actually a pretty hopeful movie. Anyway, Jared had written a track, and he's like, I want to get Pink to sing it. And he reached out to her, and ultimately she couldn't do it because of schedule, but she kept his text. And at some point in time, she said, hey, you know, I got this song I started, and I think it'd be really great to have you guys on. And that started the ball rolling.
Wow.
And it happened very quickly. Like, all of a sudden, you know, Jared's like, oh, we got this song. Wes just says, we want to come to your studio and just figure it out. And we did it in 2 days.
Wow.
And you know, it was pretty, I mean, I have to say, one of the things that was pretty cool is, you know, when you get people's vocals and you put them up and you've got your mix and you're sort of like roughing up, I'm going through her vocals and I'm like, wow, she really is a great singer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like her music, don't like her music, respect her, don't, whatever it is that you have, like, you put it up, objectively, she's a remarkably good artist.
100%.
And it was super fun. It was super fun to make that track, and it was super fun to be part of that process. And I think there's going to be more of those unexpected. It just seems like everyone right now is really in the mood to do a lot of that kind of collaborative stuff. I mean, it's hard to get it done a lot because everybody's teams and labels and all that stuff, they got to all agree, and that's why duets are so hard to it's really hard to push a duet forward, like mm-hmm. super hard, especially if it's a collab. But it ended up being really fun, and it was super cool to, you know, I mean, there's one part of the song where I'm just playing organ and Pink is singing. I'm like, I got to rock out with Pink, and that's actually a pretty cool moment, too. I was pretty psyched.
That's pretty cool. You know, I had Byron Isaacs on last week, and he said he got to play bass on that.
Yeah, he was here. He got to play bass, and he got to sing. The whole ending is him and James Felice just wow. singing a harmony part. The song, it's funny, there was no ending. I took one of their harmony parts and just, like, messed with it, and it's beautiful. I mean, Byron is an essential part of our community, and he's absolutely, I would consider him, like, one of the most essential ingredients to Sun Mountain as well. He plays on, and, you know, he's so much part of a lot of stuff we work on.
Yeah, yeah, he's terrific. He's just, he's amazing. I've loved him for years since I started seeing him years ago, and just to see the trajectory of his career is just heartwarming. It's so well deserved, and he's such a hardworking guy. So yeah, kudos to Byron Isaacs. What we just played, and I did not know her until you sent me tracks, so I'm not on TikTok. Maybe I should be, but I'm not. Carly Pearl, what a great song, Pronoia.
Yeah, well, this is a funny one. This actually came through Renee. Renee was in a band called Scruffy Pearls with Carly Pearl, and they broke up. I don't know what happened. And then Carly got this huge TikTok sort of following just by singing duets and songs or whatever. And at some point in time, you know, she got scheduled to come here, and I said, fine, we'll co-write a song, and which is what happened. We stood around the piano, and, you know, I played some chords, and she had a lot of lyrical ideas. She already had the concept of Pronoia, writing a song about that in her head, and we wrote it, and we recorded it, I think, in one day. It was very, very fast, and we're going to be recording a bunch more songs starting tomorrow. We're actually going to do a full EP with her, and the surprising thing was the song really took off on TikTok, and then it really took off in sort of like Spotify. It's been growing and growing and growing, and she got added to like Fresh Finds for Spotify. Like, you know, she went from it's so hard for new artists. I'm sure you know this, but I'll state the unbelievably obvious. It's almost impossible to get heard with new music nowadays. Mm-hmm. And she kind of broke through with a message of positivity. And I like, there's a little bit of throwback, and actually, interestingly enough, it's Kevin Kadish and I playing. He played guitar on it, and I played. It's basically the All About That bass band, except we added Renee Boos playing drums, because it was only the two of us on that too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, very catchy tune, cute video, the whole thing. So I loved it. And I was also very impressed with Matt Hartke's London's song.
Yeah, London song is a surprise one. So Matt drove up here one day from Jersey. He lives out right outside of the city, and he and I just sat and made a song. And I remember we did it very fast. He didn't have a lot of budget, and we didn't have any labels or anything. And I didn't think much of it. I thought, oh, that was fun. He's a cool guy. I met him through a friend, and then all of a sudden, like, he blows up on TikTok. They start making baby videos to him. Now there's over 100,000 reels on Instagram that use that song. Everybody, Jimmy Fallon's tweeted out that song. All these celebrities have used it in their videos.
Wow.
And so now we're on a single we did in one day, really just the two of us. Like, there was no, I think in the end we might have added a little bit of drums. But, you know, he's got over 20 million streams, and I think that is projected to go up to probably gold level of streams, they're telling us.
Unbelievable. Wow.
You never know. You got to go to the studio. You got to write music. You got to work hard. You got to go to the studio, and then you just have to be super open hearted and do a lot. I mean, you just have to dig deep. And the thing about Matt, when I met him, he's a producer himself, and he really wanted to really produce the song and have a lot of background parts and all these background vocals and tune everything with Melodyne and make it all like very slick, because he's very used to that. And I felt at least on that song, I was like, I think it should be really raw. We shouldn't tune your vocal. We should leave everything very human. We should use a lot of like plate reverb, which is like an old school type of equipment. And we should just be brave, like, and we should go for it. We should go for like an emotion rather than trying to make a production. And I feel like about 60 to 70% of the time that I'm producing, especially indie artists that, you know, are at the beginning, mm-hmm. most of what I'm doing is just getting rid of a lot of things and trying to push the song and the vocal forward and trying to like make it really evocative and super interesting with literally the least amount of elements I can, which is crazy because I'm, you know, I'm trained as an orchestrator and all of those things. But I just have realized you want to penetrate people's hearts. It's more about getting anything that's in the way out of the way.
Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense. Yeah, I was really impressed. The video on that was just adorable, too. London's Song by Matt Hartke. And then another one that we're going to listen to, Arum Ray.
Now, Arum Ray is was signed for a long time down in Nashville to, I forgot the name of the label, one of the hugest sync labels. She wrote the theme for Nashville, in fact.
Wow.
Like, even though it was Joy Williams singing it, Arum wrote it. Arum's a really amazing songwriter. And this project actually came through Wes from the Lumineers. So Wes and I have been producing some artists together. And he brought that to me after we did the Lumineers Brightside. He's like, oh, there's this woman. I've been writing songs with her. They did some like guitar demos in Denver. And then she came here and we did a full record. And I really love that record. And there's a lot of amazing songs on it. It's got a bunch of local musicians on it. It's kind of like, it's a little rough and tumble, but her songwriting is extraordinary, and she's an amazing singer.
Yeah, yeah, she really is. What a vocal. Yeah, just amazing. Now, of course, Lumineers, you've worked on, what, 3 albums of theirs now?
Yeah, in various different contexts. Mm-hmm. I've worked on 3 of their records while they were making it, but outside of that, I've actually been involved in the remaster and repackaging of the first record and a lot of other projects. I've just done a lot of stuff with them, which has been amazing.
Yeah, it really has. And of course, you're all over. You co-produced Brightside, their latest release, which they're out on world tour doing. You've seen Lumineers live, right? Because it must be obviously so different having them at Sun Mountain and then going to see tens of thousands of people watching them.
I have seen them live, and it's interesting because it's fun to see them live, and it's fun to see them in the studio. You know, I think the biggest thing with the Lumineers is, I met them with Simon Felice many years ago, and they were just had their hit, Ho Hey, mm-hmm. and they came and performed on Simon's record, which we were cutting here at Sun Mountain, early Sun Mountain days. So I met them many, many, many years ago. Their evolution has been truly unbelievable. Like, the fact that they have the crowd and the audience that they have is, I mean, it's a testament to their greatness. It's a testament to Wes's vocals and the songwriting, but there's just something about that crowd where it's like a train that kept moving forward.
Unbelievable. Now, like you say, though, what you just said about leaving some out, it feels like Wes's voice and the whole band, they connect with the audience, right? And it's that emotion that comes out, and that's what gets the people and has that audience, it seems like, growing and growing. And when you watch their videos, the audience members knows every single song, every word to every single song, every single one.
I mean, they went to India and everyone knew all the songs. They've been to all these places, and it's amazing. And I salute them. And I'm friends with a few bands like that where they're very successful, but yet they don't have like a massive amount of radio hits, like Cigarettes After Sex. I've been working with Greg Gonzalez a lot, and mm-hmm. like massive followings, huge audiences. Radio sort of like helps them to some extent, but they're not on pop radio. It's mm-hmm. like Dave Matthews or something. It's like mm-hmm. it becomes a culture, and it becomes sort of a zeitgeist around the band and the artistry and their side projects. And it's just an incredible look. It's amazing. And I couldn't be more grateful to them and to the whole crowd. I mean, I love them, and I do love their, I love their infrastructure too. I love their, the people who work with them and their managers. And it's like the nicest people got together and got successful, which is not always the case.
And you know what? Nothing beats that. And that's why I'm so happy Byron's part of that as well, you know, and it's just a really, it looks like a wonderful scene together and just, you know, real people keeping it real and having a lot of fun along the way too. So, yeah. Now you also, from what I understand, because when Byron was here last week, you know, we talked, he's producing Alexis P. Suter, and I understand you might have a little something to do with that as well.
Yeah, they called me. I think I'm just mixing a track for them, a song for them initially, but I'm really looking forward to it. He sent me a song, and we're going to play with it. Byron's actually going to come up to the studio, and we're going to, you know, play with the tracks, see what we can do mix-wise, see like what we can dig out of it. I mean, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. I've never met her in person, and I really look forward to meeting her, but she's inspiring, and she's amazing. She has incredible history, so I'm hoping we can, like, I feel like Byron's got a vision, mm-hmm. and when we sit in the studio together, we're probably going to figure out exactly how to make that vision come to life. I'm actually really looking forward to that.
Yeah, yeah. No, she is unbelievable to see live. I talk about captivating and powerful and just, oh, she's really a beautiful soul, Alexis P. Suter. And yeah, if you get a chance to see her live, anybody that's listening, I can't recommend her enough. She's so much fun and just a powerhouse of a singer. And her whole band is just really, really amazing. A couple of other things that you say that you're working on. You've got a full calendar, I think, this year. Yes?
A fairly full, yeah.
Well, that's good.
I mean, I think that's a good thing, personally. I'm like, I have like optimist-pessimist things where I will wake up at the sometimes and be like, oh, there's no work. I'm not going to get in. I'm not, you know, nothing's going to happen. And then it usually ends up that things just happen. So you sort of have to just kind of go on faith. So whenever I look at the calendar and I see a lot of things I'm looking forward to, I feel very excited.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you shouldn't. I don't think your work is going to slow down anytime soon, David, if ever. Never, never, until you want it to. So, yeah. Talk about the collection of synths that you have and how do you find them? I mean, when you were nice enough to invite us, I was amazed at everything I saw. I know nothing about them all, but there were a whole lot of synthesizers around and keys and yeah. What?
I mean, so the long and the short of it is when I was quite young, I started doing a lot of television music and things like that. And I started getting really pretty decent royalties, but I lived in a, rent-stabilized apartment. And the only thing I really ever wanted growing up was every synth I saw in Keyboard Magazine. And I started buying them because I could. And they were much cheaper back then.
Yeah.
And so my mentor was this guy named Gershon Kingsley. And Gershon Kingsley was a Moog, one of the big Moog guys. And he wrote Popcorn on the Moog. And I used to work with him. And he kind of trained me, actually sort of like taught me conducting and a lot of other really cool things. So it was very connected to analog synthesis. And so during the course of that period, I picked up things like an ARP 2500, which is super rare. And that's Alan Robert Perlman's company, and his daughter, actually, Dina, lives in Kingston and has a foundation. I have a Moog system, a big Moog system from 1967.
Wow.
I have all kinds of, like, an EMS Synthi from England from 1970.
Damn.
So there's a lot of crazy, beautiful instruments, and they're all set up, and everything's working.
So my question is, when everything's not working, who fixes that?
Well, I have a whole group of people that fix things.
You do? You must?
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. Of course. I know techs, and I've had things fixed in Canada. I've had things fixed all over. I mean, there's a bunch of really great techs. The biggest issue is, you know, you got to wait, and it's expensive. So it's a big commitment if you want to get into the, like, collecting old analog vintage synthesizers. You know, it's the rewards are amazing. Mm-hmm. I love the studio because it's highly tactile and it's highly interactive. You know, I have a Rhodes from 1972 and a Hammond B3 from the 50s and all of that stuff with all the synths. It's like you can just walk around and you can find like some inspiration. And that's a big part of what I put into my tracks, too. I mean, there's a lot more synths on the record that even Lumineers than you would think.
Yeah, interesting. Did you ever meet or know Cecil Taylor?
You know, I never met him, but I did meet Bog Moog at a party once.
Because Cecil was up in our
Taylor,
area.
Cecil Taylor was a genius.
Yeah,
he was a genius. He formed Tonto. I wanted to meet him. I don't know why I never did. I mean, it's interesting. I know he was in Woodstock and Tonto was up here, which is that huge synth big. Yeah, no, that was a loss. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. I had him on my show. And
wow.
Just amazing guy to talk to. And, whew, yeah, no. I would imagine the two of you would have had a lot to discuss if he was still around. That's for sure.
I have synth friends, like literally people that I call. And I could talk to them for an hour about, you know, some synth stuff. And, you know, it's just, it's a beautiful and fun world.
Yeah.
But I mean, I love audio gear too. I mean, I love it all. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you can get into that with guitars. I mean, every instruments sort of have no level of, you know, I'm very into the pianos too. I recently got a Steinway D from 1954, which is concert grand. And I got it from Benny Klein, another radio person actually, who I work with, and I'm helping her with some songs, and she's amazing. And, you know, this belonged to her sister and her sister's husband, and has this incredible backstory to it. And it was all personal, like a personal deal after her sister unfortunately passed. And I have to say that piano has now become like one of my favorite. I know it's like all these synths, all this electronic stuff is really cool, but when you play a piano and it's big and beautiful, it's kind of like almost a religious experience.
I can imagine that. I can definitely imagine that. Your film scoring is also something I am always in awe of. I've seen your films, one of them, Keely and Dew, several years ago. It was released on the Woodstock Film Festival, and you were there. And the scoring is beautiful on that. And as you just mentioned, Here is Better is another film that you scored. And that's actually, that was part of the, I don't think it was the, was it the film festival? That it came out, Woodstock Film Festival, and now it's being released?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's being released, yeah, soon. But Greenwich is releasing it in theaters soon, I think in May. And then it'll probably go to streaming after that. And that's a great film. And I've got another project that I'm working on that I'm not allowed to talk about, but it's really cool scoring project. I love that. Well, I'm working on a great thing, but I can't tell you about it.
Can't tell you about it. Just stay tuned.
But you know how it is. It's like I scoring for me is kind of like, I'm pretty happy to do projects I love, but it's song production has become such a much more part of my day to day. So when I do go into a film world or I'm doing something scoring, which I used to do, by the way, every day for the first part of my career, I'm now so excited. I'm not jaded at all about it. I'm like, wow, Image, we can do cool stuff now.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of exciting things that you're working on here. It looks like also a local artist, Diana DeMuth.
Yes, I've been working with Diana, with Simon, for a while. And we did a few covers recently that she's released. And I think she's actually releasing just a bunch of covers on her own as well. And she's been doing great. I love working with her.
Yeah, that's great. And Felicity. You're working.
Oh yeah, you're asking me. I think I sent you a whole list.
Yeah.
Felicity's a Nashville-based artist, and I'm just helping her finish her record, mixing her record. But I'm actually going down in Nashville in about a week for Sierra Carson, who you played Heartbeat for, and Sierra Carson is an artist that Kevin Kadish and I developed, and she's really amazing. She's really young. You know, she's at Belmont. Belmont is the sort of school down in Nashville that all the sort of music kids go to. Now I've produced two people from Belmont. But anyway, she's kind of an amazing artist, and I think the new songs we're just about to record, I'm really super excited. I mean, you know, it's always fun to find. I actually kind of like it. I mean, I'm in the studio sometimes with people who, you know, they can't drink legally, but they're making awesome music. You know what I mean? I actually offered by accident a glass of wine to an artist, and he's like, oh, I can't drink yet. I got to wait till next year. And I was like, I don't know if I would have done that at your age, but yeah. That's kind of awesome.
Yeah, I think that's kind of awesome too. Now, please talk a little bit about Kevin and you and what mega hit you guys were part of.
Well, I mean, Kevin's probably my best friend. I mean, I talk to him all the time, and we're very, very close. And he and I have been making music for a long time. I mean, it's probably two countless, I don't know how many things we've done together, but lots and lots and lots. But the biggest song was all about that bass. And that song, Kevin wrote it with Megan in the morning. I think I told you this story. And, like, they sent me, like, a, you know, a drum, bass, vocal thing. I added piano and saxes and organ. I mean, I literally played, I think I told you this, I played it all. Then did a gig at the Falcon that night with Timmy Stone. And, you know, I didn't think, you never think like, oh, I just played on a hit. Or I'm making a hit. Like, the idea that someone says that, like, they know when something's going to be hit is probably the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Because, like, nobody ever knows. And I've been on hits and I've been on lots of things that everyone's like, this is a hit. And then it's not. Just something happens in the culture. That was the right cultural messaging, I think, at the time. And the track was just weird enough to just sort of, just was the right thing at the right time. And Kevin's an amazingly great pop writer. So his talent is, you know.
And how'd you guys meet? Crazy. How'd you guys meet?
We met on a project, I think, for Atlantic Records. Uh-huh. I don't know. We met a long time ago. When I used to do, like, I would call it, like, itinerant work. I was still doing mostly TV stuff, but I used to do a lot of, like, I'll do keyboards for your record. I'll do strings and arrangements for your record. Or I used to do, like, track fixing, like, for, like, when labels wanted to do edits and whatever. Like, so I did just, like, a lot of stuff. And I think I did keyboards on some of the stuff he was producing when he first started or songs he wrote. And we just became really close very quickly. And he ended up becoming a fixture around Edison Studios, which was in Manhattan for a while. I mean, it was a lot of really, it was the interesting thing about having a facility in the middle of Manhattan is like Woodstock was sort of in the 70s. You track all these people and then all of a sudden it's like a whole culture. You know, it was Lenny and it was Kadish and it was a bunch of other really great people all sort of centered around, you know, and I think that's great. And I mean, I think that, you know, is happening in Woodstock, too. Like I was saying before, though, I think we could make it happen even more.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. I was just while you were talking about Meghan Trainor's hit there with you guys, 2.5 billion with a B views on YouTube.
Yeah. You know, what's so funny is when I was a kid, I had a piano teacher that was really mean, and I was probably like 10, and she told me that I would never catch up to her other students and never be anything.
Oh,
and
my God.
Sometimes I think, she might be right. It's true. But eventually I'm going to be at least heard.
Yeah.
Whether I'm good or not, I don't know.
Yeah. Is she still alive? Like, have you reached out?
No, I have no idea what happened to her. She's just like one of those terrible people that, like, you know how they say, like, that, like, if you get a bad review or if you have a teacher tell you you can't do something, that there's sort of two reactions. One is you give up and the other one is you're like, oh, I'm going to show them.
Right.
That was like, she probably did me one of the biggest favors in my life, because it's after that that I actually really became serious about playing piano.
Right. And knowing what you want to do.
Yeah, there's nothing quite like someone telling you you can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. No, good for you. Good for you. David, you're just, you know, I am in awe of your talent. I am in awe of everything that you touch. I love having your name when I see it on the music. And we're lucky to have you back in Woodstock. So I'm glad you decided to come back from New York and have your roots here. Raise your son here and just bring this amazing music and this magic to these mountains that you are bringing. I mean, every track that you sent me, I thoroughly listened to every one of them, and I've never honestly not liked anything you put out. I've always connected to it and somehow, and I love the different aspects and the different genres that you're just kind of working with it all and making it happen. So thank you for doing what you do and keep bringing this beautiful music out to the masses, because we need more of it. We need more.
Thank you. Thank you, Rita. And I feel like you're due. as big or bigger of a thank you, because what you do for the area is amazing. Oh. And I feel like highlighting all these incredible, I've learned about people I didn't know. I listened to all of Byron's. I know Byron really well. I know some of those stories, and I still thoroughly enjoyed it. And I told them I also saw Death Trap on Broadway, and it was pretty funny. I was like, I think that what you do is super important. I'm glad you do it. I know it's volunteer, and I know it's a lot of work to put together, but thank you.
You're welcome. And it's my absolute pleasure because of people like you in this area. So I miss seeing you perform live. I know when Simi was getting that self-titled album, oh my God, it was so much fun to see you in the clubs and even at the Spiegel Tent at Bard. So I miss
that. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't play live very often,
I know.
Unfortunately, but you know, there's a time and a place for everything, right?
Absolutely. And listen, you do a scoring of films, and you'll see me in the audience. I'm a huge David Barron fan. And how can they find you?
Well, they can find me on my website, ddavidbarron.com. They can find me on Spotify, just as David Barron. And Apple Music, same thing. And Instagram, David of Barron. I couldn't get David Barron for some reason. And I'm happy to, you know, hear from anybody, and I really appreciate anybody listening to the music that I work on and the music that I make.
Absolutely. Grateful. Absolutely. And you're just an amazing talent. You really are brilliant, and you are a genius at what you do. And I do not say that weakly. I promise you that. So thank you. I'm going to let everybody listen to Pink. And this is, you produce this, yes? Long Way to Go with the Lumineers.
And recorded, yeah, yes, exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. David, I'll talk to you soon. Best of luck to you, and say hi to the family.
Thanks again.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. 91.3 WVKR, Independent Radio, Poughkeepsie, New York. Wow, always amazing. I love talking to David. He's on every single year, and as long as he keeps making music, he's back on the show. So Pink, you know Pink. She just released this with the Lumineers. Let's take a listen to this, recorded at David Barron Studio here. 91.3 WVKR, Independent Radio, Poughkeepsie.
Who do you love? Let it roll off your tongue. Who do you love? When it all falls down, crying for help, but you don't pick up your phone, probably drunk. You couldn't stop, couldn't stop, couldn't realize. And all your enemies real in your real life. I could stay out with you all night. I wanna know how you feel on the inside. We got a long way, we got a long way to go.
You're what I want. I'm in a desperate way, filling my cup, pretend it's all okay. Watch me above. Flickering like a flame. One ain't enough. I think I could stop. Don't you realize that all my demons and fears disappear now? When you stay up with me all night. I wanna show you my scars in the day. Always say it ends the same. You never try, you never change. And you, oh, we got a long way, we got a long way to go. When the feeling comes, the pain dies slow.
We got a long way, we got a long way.
91.3 WVKR Independent Radio, Poughkeepsie, New York. The new album called Trustfall, track we just heard, Long Way to Go, Pink featuring The Lumineers. My guest today, David Barron of Sun Mountain Studios, davidbarron.com. You can check him out online. Also, we'll be uploading this interview if you're just tuning in or want to hear it again or missed it. Just check out the YouTube channel tonight. I'll be uploading the conversation we just had with David Barron. The Local Motion channel is Local Motion on 91.3 WVKR YouTube. You'll find it, and you'll also find it on Spotify, and you'll also find the Facebook page by that same name. I'll be back next Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. with a couple of members of the band Upstate. In 2 weeks, we're going to have Martin Sexton on air. 3 weeks, Annalise and Ryan, and 4 weeks, the ending of April, we'll have Lee Falco. I'm so happy to say that Dr. J is in the house, and he will be on at the top of the hour. Going to leave you now, though, with one more track from David Barron that he sent us. Let me get in a room, Ray. 91.3 WVKR. Till next time, I wish you peace.
Just pulled up in a big street town. We're gonna start a new life. We kept on driving till the gas ran out and left it at the stoplight. Ah, loose ends, loose ends, loose ends. The hungry mouths at the Hickory House, the name tag on my shirt. Serving French toast in the